This is beautiful, Wendy.
What all I'm Cardi thinking B. of is lollipops and yeah. unicorns.
Yeah, it's the Minions.
It's the Minions.
That's so cute.
Come
Happy
on,
birthday,
Wendy.
Wendy.
Come on.
Happy birthday, Wendy.
Thank you.
You look good for your age.
You're a jerk. Well, Bertrand and I are now the same age, and you will come up upon our age in November.
Oh, I got a ways to go.
You're 55?
No.
No.
Neither are you.
Oh.
Greater than?
Right.
I'm making my arms in the alligator greater than sign.
I passed the 55.
You are well preserved. Is that better?
It's from all the alcohol.
It's really bad. It's
like, but I'm closer to 60 now. This is what's bothering me.
Oh, now we know the truth.
60 is the new 70.
No,
wait, that's not it.
No, Steve, 60
the
other
the
way.
New 40.
Oh, the okay. Way. Is that what it, is that true?
I knew it wasn't 60 anymore.
What happened to the old 40?
It went away.
It's gone?
They died.
60 is now 40, you're mm-hmm. saying.
Well, I got
to change
years.
My tax reports now.
So do you think you'll get there?
My 1060 forms are all
sure hoping. Fingers yeah. are crossed.
You'll I mean, get you know, there. Y'all get there.
It's all good news. Another day, another
yep.
day closer to death.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I thought you were going to say another day, you know, we take each as it comes, but that's
right.
depressing,
no, but
too.
You know,
so
what's wrong with getting another year on your total? It's all good.
I don't care
and you
anymore.
Have brand new knees.
I do.
Yeah.
How old awesome. Are your knees?
One is 13 and one yeah. is one.
One's a leap knee, isn't it?
Yes.
Do you celebrate birthday knees?
No. One is still healing. It's not healed as great as I'd like
it's
it to.
It's been 2 years, hasn't it?
No, it's been in December it was a year, so we're just a little over a year.
What body part will you swap out next?
My boobs.
Oh, that'll be fun. We'll do a podcast.
That's my 60th birthday present to myself. Instead of shoes that I bought myself this year.
Yeah. Then our show will be on CLTV. It won't just be the morning show and the afternoon show.
All
that's
right,
not putting us on the
that's
CLTV.
That's what's holding us back?
That's so far.
Why don't you get them first?
Nah, I can't.
You're younger.
I'm afraid of needles.
How old are you, Bill?
I'm a sprightly 55.
It's weird that we're all the same age.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Born in 1963, all of us, except Mary. Sorry.
Hmm?
Not even talking.
No. That's fine.
She's Mommy younger Mary. Than us.
That's fine.
No.
So are you having your friends from class come over for a party today after class?
Yep.
After school?
They're
yeah.
bringing cupcakes.
Oh.
You have to invite everyone.
And I'll tell you what, there'll be nuts in them because there was no
right,
such
no
thing as a nut
back
allergy
then.
Back then.
Everything's changed.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before, but it was always strange in my school. I think they probably did it in your school, too. On your birthday, you were required to bring in candies or treats for all the kids. And if you tried to reason it out with the teacher and go, no, shouldn't it be the opposite? Shouldn't the kids all bring in a candy or treat for me? It's my birthday. They would have none of that.
First of all, no other kid would do that but you.
Right.
Because it's not,
there's
like,
that.
It's not like you're making the cupcakes.
No, that's true. No, I agree with that. It seemed like a backwards practice to me. Like somebody had a good idea. They just didn't implement it quite properly.
Yeah, it does seem off.
Right? If it's my birthday, why am I giving everybody stuff?
You just have a sheet set up and everybody gets a different kid to bring in for their birthday, although you wouldn't put the effort if it wasn't yours.
No.
Nope. You know, I don't recall that happened in my school, that we had treats for our birthdays.
Oh, you didn't? No?
I just have blocked it out, but I don't remember that.
My kid's elementary school, not high school, this was such a great thing. You got your name on the announcements. And then you got to go to the library and pick out a book. Isn't that the greatest thing for an elementary school
pick
student?
Pick out a book
well,
to borrow,
it's
no,
not to keep.
Yeah, there were like
really?
There were new books that they got to pick through the selection.
Well, that's good because I think borrowing a book from the library is not a really big
it's
thing.
Not that, yeah,
no,
most
you
kids
get
have
your
that
own.
Ability.
You get to pick one out of this box, and then
you
got
keep
to
it.
Keep it.
Are these books that weren't good?
No, these are like new books that that they would purchase probably excess from the book fair.
Oh,
so
right.
new current books, and then a kid could go through the box and choose their book for their birthday. I think that's a great gift.
I just picture some like 8-year-old going, this is all Jacqueline Suzanne. What am I going to do with I don't care about this.
I remember when I was a kid at the school, I lived near the school, and the dumpster was filled with old textbooks that they were throwing out.
Really?
And it was just, I thought it was a Trevor Trove, you know?
Yeah.
Like, treasure trove.
Yeah.
Like in the dumpster going through all these old books.
Textbooks, though.
Yeah, but still, just to have all these books around.
Okay, professor.
No, but, you know, it just was kind of a cool thing. And then,
did you guys have a truck in your... All right, so in the parking lot of our school, we did this quarterly. We did this every 3 months. There'd be a recycling truck in our parking lot, and people would come and they would bring old books and magazines, and they'd put them next to the truck, and then the handyman at the school would load them on the truck.
The handyman?
Yeah, we had Bob Coppers was our handyman, and he and his minions would then load up the truck. But if somebody brought in like Playboys or Penthouses, word spread throughout the school like wildfire. Like everybody wanted, they planned something to, well, you know, I'll throw away my old Mad magazines and maybe I'll find something right. in the truck. It was like the weirdest thing. But you'd hear whispers and stuff or notes would be passed.
We never had that truck.
No, you didn't?
Or a handyman.
But we did know every dad on the block who subscribed.
Oh, did you?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you just need an internet.
Right.
Connection.
It's all, everything's different, Steve.
It's so different.
It's all different.
Yeah, there are some things you shouldn't be seeing on the internet.
No. I'm not ready for it.
We're
not ready for it. So there will be a big dinner tonight, I'm guessing, with the family.
Weird night. One of my sons has to do a TV shoot, a truck shoot. Till 9 o'clock.
Oh.
The other son is in the orchestra pit of a musical, so he'll be gone. And
Jimmy's taking you somewhere nice.
Yeah, I think we're going just somewhere downtown LaGrange. He ordered my key lime pie from a place that we loved, and they have really good key lime pie, so that's my birthday pie.
That's perfect.
And I picked out 2 pairs of shoes, which I'm getting.
Oh, this is a very nice birthday.
I mean, does it matter? You don't really care. You don't care about birthdays that much, do you? Like, if you're not with your kids, or...
Is that going to bother
you? Well, it's funny because both of them said, we won't be home till later. My youngest son, Dylan, said, should I cancel the truck shoot? And I said, no. I don't care. Actually, some time away from you would be a great birthday gift.
That's nice. That's very, very Mother Walton-y of you.
I don't know. My kids are really sentimental when it comes to birthdays and holidays. They really are. The rest of the year, I don't know.
Not as much?
But they really are. So I'm like, no, I'm fine.
Yeah.
It'd be nice for Dad and I to go out together tonight.
Yes, it would.
So, yeah,
yes,
that's what we will do.
It will be. All right. We'll take a break, and then there's more show. Wendy, Lakeshore Drive is broken.
I know. Yesterday, this happened about 11-ish, 11:15. We were on the air. Steve Grzanich was coming in here.
With a look on his face of both fear and great interest.
Well, he was trying to get the rest of the story.
Yes, he was.
And you really couldn't see anything because there's a high rise. Is that the Intercontinental?
That is the Swiss Hotel.
Oh, yes. That was blocking our view, so we couldn't see what was going on. Police activity is all we heard.
Yeah.
And then I saw pictures of it, and then on the news, that is scary.
Pretty serious.
There's a support beam that is just completely cracked.
Yeah.
Who noticed that? Was pavement falling? What was going on?
I don't know if they do. And Steve, if you know, or Mary, you know, please jump in. I don't know if they do daily or weekly or monthly rounds where, you know, certain people's job it might be to inspect things like that. But yeah, it was a very severe crack. And then while repairing it, they found another one.
Yeah, CDOT was doing an inspection yesterday when they saw it.
So do we know how routine those inspections are, Steve?
I think it was a routine inspection, but I don't know if that they look at it every week or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm. I bet the polar vortex had something to do with it.
It very well could have.
I mean, look at all the potholes that have just sprouted up. I'm sure that had something to do with the bridge.
Yeah. But think about what potentially could have happened.
Oh, my God.
It could have just flat out collapsed. I'm surprised. I mean, I know that Lakeshore Drive is a major thoroughfare, so you can't close it down. You shouldn't close it down. But I'm kind of surprised they're allowing southbound traffic, and they did all day yesterday, too. It's just northbound that they've stopped. And also, that part of the bridge is kind of double-decker, and if you'll look, there are, on the lower level, the less used level...
That should be closed off.
I'm very surprised that's not also closed off.
It's like top bunk bed or bottom bunk bed. I go top because if it caves in, you're going to be okay.
Yeah. I like your laws of self-preservation. That's excellent. But very, very scary. And I'm also amazed that they expect, unless this has changed, they expect to have things up and running and back to normal later tonight.
Well,
I heard all this week.
Oh, is it all this week?
They hope to have it a temporary fix. They're putting some steel girders up keep everything in place. But
traffic will return to it, they think, tonight at some point, right?
That's the hope, yes.
Yeah.
It's pretty
That's
scary.
Amazing.
I think of all these bridges that are here.
Hundreds of them.
I'm amazed that more problems don't exist.
Well, we've talked about this in the past, and I'm not just centering it on Chicago, it's nationally. When there has been an accident and there's been like a bridge that's collapsed and stuff, everybody really bears down and says, boy, we really got to take a look at stuff like this because these things were built sometimes 100 years ago. We got to fix it and make sure everything's all right. And then after about a week, everybody stops talking about it.
I'm sure they inspect them just like they do the elevators.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's a lifting bridge, so, you know, that's going to get some use. You know, they have those little towers to either side of the lifting bridge. Is anyone ever in there anymore? Back in the old days, didn't someone...
I think one of them is the museum now, even. There's a little bridge house museum.
Yes, I think you can go, but no one, like, sits in there, right?
Maybe a couple of aldermen's sons or things like that.
Oh.
City jobs like
that.
I don't know, yeah.
That'd be a fun job.
No, I don't know that anyone does.
At the town we stay at in Maine, there is a bridge that goes through part of the downtown area. I say downtown, and it makes it sound really busy. It's not that busy. It's very rustic. Anyway, there's a bridge, and when a boat comes by, there's nobody in the tower, so it's up to citizens, people just passing by, to make the bridge go up and down so that boats can go through.
What?
Isn't that strange?
There are no, like, gates or anything?
No, there's just the bridge that you can walk over, but most of the boats that come into that harbor have masts that are too high. So,
as a boat, great line.
It's a famous movie line. So as a boat is approaching, you see people from the area just watch the boat come in and they go, about 3 minutes away, 2 minutes away. I'll get this one. And then they go and they make the bridge go up and down.
If that happened here, no one would lift the bridge.
I know.
There'd be a backup, a traffic
Forever.
Jam of high masted boats.
Right. No, you'd lift it and then you'd drop it to see how close you could get to the back of the mast.
Right. Have some fun with it.
Hurry.
It's based on the trust system.
Is that how it works on the East Coast?
Yeah, I don't think Maine. Everywhere on the East Coast, just that, the more remote parts of Maine.
See, give people more lobster, they get nicer.
Yes.
I think that's how it works.
Yes.
John has a bridge comment. Hi, John. Welcome to Bridge Talk.
Hey, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Hey, do you guys remember 4 or 5 years ago, maybe more, that bridge in Minneapolis that collapsed?
That's the one I was talking about.
And I remember that after that happened, they did like a national study. They said 75% of the bridges in the U.S. needed to be repaired.
Oh, no.
Jeez. Well, there was a local union guy here saying that, you know, look, we're paying attention to the outdated bridges. We're not paying attention to the newer ones. And this is, you know, one that shouldn't have been in this situation.
Yeah, I just wonder how many bridges got fixed after that happened.
That number is staggering, John. 75% is outrageous.
I know. And every time I go across the little bridge these days, I think of that number, actually.
Yeah. I don't blame you. John, thank you.
Thanks, John.
You're welcome. Yep.
That's that infrastructure that President Trump talks about.
Yes.
We need to take care of it.
Yes.
Build a bridge. Build a bridge.
Yes.
Build a bridge.
And which country shall pay for it?
We will.
We will.
USA.
Yes. All right, we'll take a break. We've got a lot of stuff on today's show. Stick around. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and it's WGN. Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. This is Tech Tuesday, and we will talk to our CNET correspondent, Bridget Carey. I think she's at Toy Fair this week.
Jealous?
Very jealous.
Why don't you go to that? We could get you credentials
I've
here.
I've never been to it. I always want to go. One year I'll go. I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Michael Heidemann got to go to the Grammys. He did a great report on the John Williams show. I'm sure the station will take care of your transportation.
Would they do that?
Yeah.
All right, maybe I'll do that.
You can talk about toys on everybody's show. What's wrong with that picture?
I'm not positive that would work. I don't know. Maybe. Anyway, here's what I wanted to bring up. This is a new technology that is exciting but very, very scary. It's called deepfake. Do you know what deepfake is? There was a video that I showed you this morning. It's Donald Trump making a speech, but what you're seeing is not actually Donald Trump speaking. What you're seeing is Mr. Bean acting out Donald Trump's speech, and it's done through a weird kind of technology. There's a program by which they rotoscope you. They put cameras in 360 degrees around you, and what they're able to do is duplicate it so that you look like you're doing something that you're not doing.
That's not just video of him and they superimpose Mr. Bean's face?
In the one that I showed you, that's what it is.
Oh,
okay. You know, they've got so much footage of both Donald Trump and Mr. Bean.
I like the accordion playing Donald Trump.
That was fun. That's fun, isn't it?
I totally love that.
One night last week on Stephen Colbert's show, he had Steve Buscemi on. And he was telling Steve Buscemi that he keeps laughing at this video that he sees online of Steve Buscemi and Jennifer Lawrence morphed together through the same technology, deepfake. And Steve Buscemi had never seen it, so he showed it to him. So what you're seeing is, you're seeing Jennifer Lawrence accepting her Academy Award a few years ago, but it's Steve Buscemi who's up there talking like Jennifer Lawrence, doing the exact move for move that Jennifer Lawrence did, except it's Steve Buscemi, and he never did that. It's all done through computer.
That's Is it his voice?
Yeah. They have the ability. They can make it either, they can keep it as her voice, they can turn it into Buscemi's voice, or they can do kind of a hybrid of both of their voices. Isn't that scary?
Well, yeah, because somebody could post a video of me saying something that I didn't say.
That's the reason I bring this up, is they're saying it is now so indiscernible that they can pretty much make it look like anyone is saying or doing something, even though you didn't do it or say it.
All right, that's scary.
That's really scary. Now, okay, are there practical applications for this? Yes, there are.
For comedy.
For
movies.
Well, yeah, for movies, because
if someone dies.
Let's say, sadly, you were making a movie. You're going to mention Princess Leia, aren't you? I see it in your head.
Yeah, but I was actually going to mention the guy who was in the last movie who had died before in the last Star Wars that I didn't know he died.
Oh, who's that?
I don't know.
Oh, Peter Cushing?
Yeah. I didn't know he had died.
All right. They used sort of a version of that with both Peter Cushing and with Carrie Fisher, where it's not quite deep fake, but it's kind
it's
of
close.
Like it. It's also a computer program that does essentially the same thing. But like I was starting to say, the fear of this is, you know, because we see so much stuff online and you see it and you go, well, that must have happened. I'm seeing a guy do it. But they can get it so close right now. And this is in the early stages of what they're
imagine
calling deepfake.
Imagine a few years down
in
the
a year
road.
Or two, right? So you can watch somebody say something or do something and go, well, they must have done it. I saw them do it.
And think of the way you can set up your opponents and things like that.
Oh,
your
yeah.
enemies, and you won't be able
Anytime
to tell what's
you want.
Real.
There's already these ads that, you know, like Melissa McCarthy lost all this weight with carcinogen or whatever it is. I don't know.
Garcia Cambogia.
How do you know that?
Because they just won a Grammy the other night.
But, I mean, she didn't. And
right.
How can they just, put a picture? Imagine if they put this together where she's saying, yes, indeed, this is how I did
it. They could put together a video where she's holding up the product saying, this is a miracle product.
Oh, my God.
When in reality, it's just a computer saying.
It's the beginning of the end for the world.
It's the beginning of the end. Here's the online explanation. This is according to Wikipedia. It says deepfake is a portmanteau of and that's the first time I've ever used that word, so send me a ribbon. Deepfake is a portmanteau of deep learning and fake. It's an artificial intelligence-based human image synthesis technique. It is used to combine and superimpose existing images and videos onto source images or videos using a machine technique called generative adversarial network. So what you're doing is you're taking old source material and new. You're combining them so that the new source material looks like the old.
Somebody said, what about bank robbers? And I don't really know what that means. But what if there's video where they're searching for someone, you know, a perpetrator on the loose? You could put someone else's face.
Put anyone you want.
Put Eric Ferguson's face on it.
I have done that. I've done that.
Police
on
are looking for Eric
I'm looking for
Ferguson.
Him right now. Yeah.
Now all of a sudden I'm happy about this.
Yeah, it's not so bad, is it? It's kind of handy.
But seriously, this could
be so scary. Because think about it. You know how in court, like, they can show something in court as evidence and say, well,
look,
clearly that guy couldn't have committed the murder because he was at a New York Knicks game. We've got him sitting in the fifth row. Except maybe he wasn't at the New York Knicks game in the fifth row. Maybe it was just a computer-generated version of him there.
I trust no one. I'm back to being Mulder.
I don't blame you.
And how do you decipher what is true and what isn't now?
That's the weird thing. Here's the second weirdest part of this. I was reading up on the technology, and they said the reason this was at first invented, and it's one of the first times I heard about it, too, about a year ago, is they were doing it to take actresses that were not in adult films and making scenes so that your favorite actresses were in adult films, even though they were not. So pick your favorite actress, Judi Dench, and you can make it look like she was in some adult film, even though she was never in an adult film.
So obviously Judi Dench can prove that that wasn't her, right?
Yes.
And so does she have any repercussions legally?
I don't know.
You know, when they invented this internet, they should have come up with some rules that goes along with it.
Everything happened too quickly.
This is frightening to me.
So it is. It's so scary.
All right. Well, we will. What is it called?
Deepfake.
We will deepfake Bridget Carey. Actually, no. We'll just talk to Bridget Carey.
Yeah, we'll ask her about it.
All right.
That's coming up in just a little bit. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Yes, that music means it's a Tech Tuesday. We go live to Bridget Carey, CNET senior editor. Bridget, we were trying to come up with a made man name for Bill, and we came up with Billy the Toy.
It sounds imposing, doesn't it?
Billy the Toy should be hanging with you.
Oh yeah, totally cool.
I'm always jealous. You get to go to Toy Fair in New York every year, Bridget. And now it hasn't started yet, right? It starts Friday?
No, it hasn't started yet. Friday's press day, where we get to see some of the things behind the curtain. If you go to CNET, maybe you'll see a few stories on Thursday about things. I don't know.
Do you have any advances on what'll be there? Do you know yet, or is it all going to be a surprise?
I've heard some companies telling me a few things, and they kind of hold it and be like, but then come see for yourself. So we'll have to really see some things for ourselves when we get there Friday, you know. But for the most part, because I'm in tech, I get pitched a lot of new ways to use your phone, or I've seen some things already that use AR. That's augmented reality, you know, kind of like how Pokemon Go, you like pointed your phone camera at something and on your screen you saw a cartoon mixed with the real world. I think with toy companies, they're always in that fine line of, well, parents don't want to hand their kids a phone to just stare into. That's the point of a toy. You want a physical thing to buy
sure.
and play with. But you find that sweet spot of like, well, can a phone enhance it in some way? We've seen earlier this year the Lego bricks. They had things where you would build the bricks, and they were working with Apple on ways you point your phone or your iPad at it and see a world come to life. So, you know, all these companies are kind of exploring this space for a couple years now. So it's interesting to see in the next week, you know, what kind of baby steps we're making into that world, or if it's something where parents will look at the shelf and go, well, I don't care what it does on the phone. I just want a good physical toy, you know.
Bridget, here's a quick question. This is the first toy fair where Toys R Us does not exist. Toys R Us was the biggest buyer of toys, all things toy. How will that change the marketplace, do you think?
I've been hearing it is changing a little bit. I think Amazon has a little more sway, because Toy Fair is not just for us dorks to check out what's going to be coming in the shelves in the Christmas time in the fall. And it's actually a time for the buyers, you know, to go see, okay, do I want to get this toy or that toy and put it on our shelves? And Target and others have made more shelf space for toys. They have more deals where, like, maybe the physical store will have a special color or type of toy that you can't get online. But Amazon, I've heard from a few folks, because they have that Prime Day big sale in the summer, they're kind of encouraging some toy makers to come out earlier than the fall with their toys. Or, you know, kind of scatter it a bit. So not everything is that big fall, you know, drop of all the new toys for the holidays. So I think because of the online world now, there are just more options in the summer. And I see that especially with STEM toys, toys that are for tinkering with robotics, getting you more into sciences and experimentation and with fun little programming things, because kids are out of school and parents want something to, you know, have fun creatively with. And I think you're going to see a big drop of toys in the summer because of that and because of Amazon's big sale.
What more toys can they come up with? I mean, seriously.
Well, they're always looking. I mean, obviously, they're always looking for something.
There's a lot
new.
Of retro toys coming back. I mean, Speak and Spell is back. That
really?
Was another thing that was announced. You know, I'm hearing about Pound Puppies being back. You know, so lots of things come back that were from when I was a kid, because it always comes in cycles. Now that I have kids of my own, I'm going to buy all this stuff for my kid that I had growing up.
You recognize, you see it on a shelf, you recognize it, you say, I had fun playing with this when I was a kid, so my kids will.
My mom is doing that as the grandma. She just bought my kid a Raggedy Ann doll. And I'm like, she doesn't know what Raggedy Ann is. But to her, you know, it was that warm, like, oh, I had it for my daughter, and I'll give it to my granddaughter. You know, and I'm like, okay. You know.
Does Raggedy Ann, because I had one too, even though it was really one of the ugliest dolls ever, but it was very popular. Yeah. Does she still have that little tattoo that says, I love you, where her heart would be?
Oh,
you
I
have
don't
to
know.
Take
I
her shirt
I
off. Sorry.
I didn't undress this
wow.
one. I'm sorry.
Well, I think I know it was either, I'm pretty sure it was like where her heart would be.
Yeah.
So like on her sternum off to the left a little bit, to the right, if you're looking at her to the right. But it's supposed to be, mine had a heart that said, I love you in it.
Well, I would say there's a lot of classics that just stay classics. Do you know Barbie turned 60 this year?
She looks great.
She does look good.
Does she have some work done?
Plastic surgery.
I would say so. But in all seriousness, you know how they came out with a line of Barbies that are more realistic in their shape, so you have options that are more heavy, tall, short, different breast sizes, and
yeah.
like they just announced that they have a Barbie coming out this year in a wheelchair and one
with a prosthetic leg.
Oh wow.
That's
yep.
awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, and so she's an influencer now. She has her own YouTube show. She is big on Instagram. You know, it's funny, like most influencers try to get into merchandising, and she was the merchandise who became an influencer. So there you go.
So she's advanced. Oh,
yeah.
Bridget.
I just heard she made a deal with Dyson the other. I'm like, what is Barbie doing?
Oh, my God.
And they're like, oh, well, she's an influencer. You know, like they make product deals. I'm like, this is incredible. We're in a weird world right now.
Bridget, I just thought of a doll that I think would sell a million. You can pitch this for me. Raggedy Ann Coulter. What do you think about that?
Oh, man.
Wouldn't that be fun?
I'll let you take that.
A voodoo
right.
doll. To some people.
Right.
All right. Now, Amazon, Amazon is in the news. You can order pictures of Jeff Bezos and have it primed to your house. Mm. He was primed, evidently. Mm. What are they into now? What is this routers? I don't even understand it.
It's a very boring story on the surface, and like all things tech, a little creepy when you dive in. So Amazon bought a company called Eero, E-E-R-O, kind of like, you know, eerie, I suppose. This is a company that makes gadgets that help your home Wi-Fi coverage. So, you know, Wi-Fi can be spotty in your
yep.
house. It's supposed to give a nice blanket. And it makes sense. You're like, okay, Amazon makes lots of little devices in your home, all these Echoes. So it wants to make sure everything can run smoothly, right? But that means it's connected to your router. That means Amazon could know everything your Wi-Fi router knows. Here's a company that is already the ears of your house, the eyes of your house, because it bought, you know, all those cameras from the Ring and other security cameras. And now it's going to know, like, all your consumer behavior because of it'll know what your router knows. Now, right now, the company says, no, we don't do that. We're very private. We're not going to spy on you.
Sure,
but,
they say
you know,
that.
But that's the original independent company called Eero. Like, what changes over time when you have a company like Amazon where their main business model is tracking customers and, you know, seeing what they can, you know, learn to better serve you. You know, so I guess we're kind of feeling a little exhaustion from, you know, all these major tech companies having a little hand in everything. And you wonder, all right, well, how is this going to change, you know, down the line in a couple of years? You know, do we have to think about this now when it comes to, like, our routers? I'm sure they'll stay the same for the time being because it would be a big story if they said, oh, no, we can actually see what you do on your router. No one would buy it, you mm-hmm. know. But at the same time, you gotta look at this a little skeptical.
And Bridget, real quick, we only have a minute. Wendy and I were talking about this process called deep faking, where they take a video of you and they morph it into another video to make it look like you're doing something that you were never doing. This is potentially dangerous. It's great technology, but it's very dangerous, or could be, right?
Yeah, we're seeing some funny examples pop up. There was one where Steve Buscemi was Jennifer Lawrence, and then there's one with Trump being Mr. Bean, and they kind of mash him up to be like this hybrid person.
Yeah.
But in reality, if enough time is spent, it actually makes it look like a celebrity is saying and doing something that they've not actually said or done. It just makes it a hard time to believe what you see. Some of the tech is mostly being done on celebrities and porn videos because that's where the money's to be made, you know. So there's, you know, this is the early stages, but it is getting to the point where a lot of research schools are kind of looking into this to see where are we going next with faking videos. Just like you Photoshop a photo, now we're doing videos. You don't know what to believe.
Yikes.
I don't believe anything. And you know, it's so hard because you go to research it on the internet and there are various websites. Let me just tell you, you know, mobbeetle.com is probably not an accurate source. Just be careful where you get your information, because even when you double check it, you can be taken to so many different links that's not true either.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bridget, have a great time at Toy Fair. I'm anxious to talk to you next week. We can't wait to hear what's going on there.
Oh, I'll give you all the buzz when you get back.
And,
yeah.
And watch the videos at CNET.com as well.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Bridget. It's Bridget Carey from CNET. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.
I don't want to talk over this.
You can't talk over this. Take our FCC license away. You're listening to Light Talk, WGN.
No, we're talking about being in love. And I have to tell you, this book, there's a new revised book that's out, Getting the Love You Want, written by two authors, Dr. Harville Hendricks and Dr. Helen LaKelly Hunt. We will be talking to Dr. Harville Hendricks right now. And I have to admit, when Bill and I were pitched with this idea, we're both married. Bill, how many years have you been married?
A long time.
I've been married over 21 years. It's like, we don't need this. But the book is called Getting the Love You Want, A Guide for Couples. And we can all use some help, can't we, Dr. Harville?
Well, we do. Helen and I do, and we wrote the book. So we would think so, and it's done pretty good with 4 million readers. So apparently, a lot of people need some help.
Congratulations on that, by the way.
Delighted to get to talk with you about it. Thank you very much.
Why revised? What has changed since you first wrote the book? Was there some major thing that changed in the world of love?
Okay, that's a really good question. A major thesis of the book is, we find it has stood the test of 30 years and test of time. We have refined some of the concepts that were kind of not too clear to us, and added a little bit of stuff, and Helen says she wants to respond to that question too.
I have lived with this guy a long time, and I'll tell you, it's like the theory is a living theory. He wakes up a lot of mornings and go, oh, Helen, I just got another download. We don't know where the downloads come from, but it's like the theory's alive. And you know what, Bill?
Huh.
Every year it gets better.
Oh, I like to
hear
that.
That's what I say. That's what I say. I go, huh, it's just getting better and better. And so there's a lot of new stuff in the new book.
All right, I have to jump in here for a minute. Do you guys, now answer this question honestly, do you guys ever fight?
Of course not.
I don't believe you.
Of course we fight. We had a fight this morning.
What was it about?
Well, I would say it's not so much a fight. It used to be a fight every morning, but now we still have tension and difference. But because we have a process, the fight doesn't turn out to be polarizing. It turns out to be can be intense, but we have differences, so we have to talk about it.
I want to announce to the radio listening audience that Bill and Wendy are an exception. Like, oh. they have a great relationship. But most people...
We aren't married, just so you know. We're married to each other, to different people.
Okay.
And I'm saying
okay,
this
no wonder,
because
no
Bill
okay.
claims
okay.
you oh, never fight people. With your
okay.
wife.
So we've
right.
had disagreements.
But we say,
yeah.
that the sign of a healthy relationship is quick repair.
Yeah.
Because we do think ouches are going to happen, and people can be taught to handle an ouch, like something that feels like a little put down, simply and easily and quickly repair it. And that's what we try to teach any couple reading the new book.
Yeah.
What if you have different reparation skills? Like when we get in a fight, it's about something stupid, and I want to solve it right away, and my husband Jim wants to, he's like, I can't talk about it right now. There are different ways in which people settle a fight. How do you come together?
Well, the answer is you have to come together ultimately and talk about your different repair skills, and the that's the secret ingredient to it all, is to be able to have a conversation and have a difference but not polarize about it, and say, you know, when I have a fight and get upset, I need time out, or if I get upset, I need to talk about it immediately. And if you talk about that, you are actually then changing the quality of your relationship by discussing and accepting each other's difference. That gives you an opportunity to work out a repair process that will work for both of you. Instead of just operating, you know, as individuals coming with your own need, you come together and talk about what you both need and co-create a way. We call it becoming partners in the project of making a great relationship.
That's great advice.
What about this? You always hear people who have been married for 60 years or 65 or 70 years, they always say, here's the key. Never go to bed angry at each other. That's impossible. You can't be together 65 years and never be angry at the person when you go to bed, can you?
No. So I'd agree with that.
Let me tell you who poor Harville was married to.
Oh, my goodness.
So I am...
You're going to confess in public?
I've always wanted to help Harville actualize his vision.
Yes.
That's one of the reasons I proposed to him. I was divorced, he was divorced, and I wanted to propose to the next person I married. And meeting Harville was such a wow. But, Bill, to tell you the truth, and Wendy, like, let's keep this among the three of us, there were some few things that needed to be tweaked. Oh. Like just some little things, like his wardrobe, uh-huh, and he would tell jokes and no one would laugh. Well, I'm good at helping. Like, I'm good at this. And so before going to bed at night, the kids were asleep, and I had his phone wasn't ringing. I had his undivided attention. That used to be the time I would tell Harville what he did wrong that day.
Yeah, sure.
Obvious.
And she
well,
made me who I am.
Well,
yeah.
It doesn't work. I will tell you that now we have a hard and fast rule. That is not the time you talk to your partner about anything they need to change, because that was disastrous. We have every night a ritual of three appreciations that we share with each other, and reading material that we both love to read that's inspiring. We snuggle. We tell each other how much we love each other, and we can pick another time to talk about any issues.
Their mistakes.
So we always go to sleep at night connected and madly in love.
Oh, good. All right. All right.
All right, yeah, there are exercises in the back of the book, too, for people who might need some help. Getting the Love You Want, A Guide for Couples. Back to you, Dr. Hendricks.
Yes. The exercises actually walk you through the book, so you turn it from just a read to a practice. And what Helen was saying about our practice is that's the one thing we've discovered, is practice, 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 practice. There's no natural way to do it. It's like think about it as a skill. If you want to play tennis, you can't go take a lesson and play tennis. You have to take a lot of lessons and practice, practice, practice to play good tennis. Marriage is the same way. But the thing that we've discovered is some things that you can practice don't help, and other things do help. So you practice what actually makes a difference. And the thing that makes a difference is being sure that what you practice create safety in the relationship. And safety is created by zero negativity, practice not putting each other down, and affirmations, practice affirming each other's being. And what happens then is you create an environment of safety where problems tend not to show up with polarizing power. They may show up as something to solve, you have different points of view about it, but you're partners to work it out rather than opponents who are constantly competing with each other for control.
I think it's important to have disagreements, but you're right. It has to be solved or else they will chisel apart the relationship.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And disagreements, the thing I like to normalize that, disagreements are not avoidable because every person's mind is different from another person's mind. Your experience, you grew up in a different family, so you have a different point of view about the world. So difference belongs to reality. They can't make that go away. But you can move to not being conflicted about it. You can go to being collaborative about it. So if you hold your differences together without judgment of each other, you actually create a new way of being together that's better than either one of you could come up with by yourself.
How about that? The book is called Getting the Love You Want, A Guide for Couples. We've got the authors on the line. We'll continue this discussion next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill Leffin, it's Wendy Snyder. We've got the authors of Getting the Love You Want, A Guide for Couples, Dr. Harvell Hendricks and Dr. Helen LeKelly Hunt. They are in love. They met at a club for people with the initials HH, and they fell in love immediately. You know how these things happen. What about this, guys? People's attention spans are not what they used to be. Does that affect love, the fact that our attention spans are so short now?
The answer would be yes, which is why it's really important that people learn to have conversations. We really promote having, even if they're short, you have conversations where you mirror back to each other. One person says, blah, 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 and you say, well, let me see if I'm getting this. Because if you don't do that, you probably missed 80% of what they said. Therefore, you'll behave in such a way that it'll be discrepant. And then you wonder, what is going on? I didn't say that. So it's really important that people talk clearly and mirror back accurately. And we teach couples and encourage everybody to mirror. When somebody talks to you, to say, let me see if I got it. And then mirror it back.
All right. You mentioned that you guys found each other after previously being married. We can figure out from this book the reasons why we choose the person that we chose to be our mate. Did you not know the secret the first time around?
When we married, we were just beginning to figure out how the unconscious selection process works and about how it's connected to childhood. Because that was in 1977 that we met, and we were just beginning to put the ideas together. The book didn't start on the book until the early 80s.
Right, but we both had studied that childhood wounds stay with us into adulthood.
Explain that a little bit. How does our childhood wound figure into whom we choose as a mate?
Well, when you're little, you make movies of your caretakers. And the two things in the movies that are always there, one is, what did they do that made me survive and feel good? The other one is, what did they not do or do that made me feel anxious and scared, didn't meet my needs? And the movie then is kept in memory. And when you're an adult, you will look around in the world. If you don't get those needs met with the caretakers, then most people don't. You'll look around in the world, and you're unconsciously, out of awareness, an unconscious perception level, will pick somebody similar to the caretaker who did not meet your needs. But the unconscious mind is timeless, so it doesn't know that, 20 years have passed or 30 years have passed. So when I see somebody unconsciously who's similar to the caretakers, whose needs I didn't meet my needs, I'll fall in love with them. The falling in love experience is the emotion of anticipation that this person, similar to my mom or dad or both, is going to meet the needs mom and dad didn't meet. That's what triggers romantic love.
All right, here's why that's... Can I tell you why that's interesting to me? I've heard forever that men tend to marry their mothers, but girls tend to marry the opposite of their fathers. Is that true or not true?
Not true.
Not true.
Not true. Both marry an amalgam of whoever were their caretakers, mom and dad, or sometimes there's an uncle or older brother or an older sister, whoever took care of you when you were little. The unconscious mind merges them all together around needs met, needs not met. So it's not gender specific at all.
That's very interesting to me.
Yeah.
My poor husband married someone like dear old dad, not like his mother. I'm more like his father than his mother, but probably a combination. Yep. That is really interesting to me. And wouldn't you find that, you know, a successful relationship, despite ups and downs, everyone has them. Family members fight because that's where you're most comfortable, is in your home. But bottom line is you have to love and support the other person and care for them like you do yourself. Is that it in a nutshell?
Well, absolutely. I think we would say, we do say that the care of the other person is the best thing you can do for yourself. And the reason we say that is since the new brain sciences have come out beginning in early 2000, we would say, a new awareness showed up in the brain sciences that whatever you focus on is what happens to you, is what you get. So if you care for your partner unconditionally, you experience that care directed at yourself by yourself. In other words, your mind is such that it splits the perception of your partner, and whatever you say to them, part of your brain says it to themselves. So the best way to take care of you is to take care of your partner. So, and it's first, take care of the partner first, then you'll be, we're dealing with the issue of self-love in our culture. It says, love yourself, then you can love others. We say, nope, wrong, love others, and in that love of others, you will simultaneously experience self-love. True, it's a reversal.
True or false, happy wife, happy life.
True or false, happy wife, happy life, true.
True or false, look before you leap. Is that true or false?
Look before you leave.
Yep, true or false?
Because I know that true. I hear a lot of male friends that I have say, oh my God, I'd be lost without my wife. She really makes all the shots. But then you see them on a different day and they're like, oh my God, you know, my wife doesn't let me do anything. Why the dichotomy there?
Well, people are not consistent. It's like they're parts that where you interface with what we'd call congruence, and there are other parts where you interface where there's a polarity. And so so it shifts, I think, if not from day to day, it certainly shifts over time.
In every couple, there's one who's more like a turtle, and they minimize their feelings and words, and there's what we call the hailstorm. They maximize their feelings and their words.
That's true.
And every turtle is drawn to a hailstorm. They fall in love, and hailstorms love turtles because their turtle can find the car keys. They can fix a boiler. Like, thank goodness. But this shows up when they disagree about something, and it's normal. We talk about incompatibility as the grounds for marriage because your partner is different, but they're also your growth potential.
That's it.
And your partner's. Yeah, and your partner's wounded, but seeing them as a part of them is wounded from childhood gives you empathy for them.
That makes sense.
So,
Helen, I'm actually married to a turtle, so what you're saying really rings true with me. We have to run, you guys.
Of course, every day you get to go out. You're such a hailstorm.
Yep.
Bill?
Yep, it makes sense.
Especially in Chicago.
Thanks so much for spending time with us. The book, again, is called Getting the Love You Want, A Guide for Couples. The authors are Dr. Harville Hendricks and Dr. Helen LaKelly Hunt. Thanks, guys. Have a great Valentine's Day.
Thank you so much, Bill and Mindy.
Take care.
You too.
Thank you so much. Yes, we are not married. Why do people think we're married?
I don't know.
We would not last if we were married.
5 minutes. Tops.
Because we're both hailstorms.
Yeah. No turtles. Both hailstorms.
All right, we'll take a quick break. News is next. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN.
Dave, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Do you mind if I mess with John Hansen a little bit?
No, I'd love it.
John Hansen's on the line. John, El Chapo found guilty. Take it.
I'll take it right from there. I thought I was going in for bridge talk. You got to be more supportive of the segments we plan.
All right. Well, we were yesterday when we were on the air. It was about this time that northbound Lakeshore Drive was closed. Steve Grzanich ran in here to see if he could see anything. There's a building in our way, and it turns out, as the pictures we have seen on the news and otherwise, there was a chunk of bridge that was missing and cracked.
Yeah, the steel plate, as we've been reporting, and they've been doing a great job, Mary, of course, as well, cracking on that northbound side. Now, we did a story for the JAMA, where I work at WCIU, where we kind of investigated and looked at how the bridges, the liftable bridges, work. And you guys were talking earlier about, are those staffed? What sort of inspections do those get? It's important to note that this isn't the part directly over the river. The river, obviously, I think everyone's driven over Lakeshore Drive, where you actually have the movable bridge, and it sounds different on the car below you. It's the steel grated sort of thing, whether you're on upper or on lower Lakeshore Drive. This is a little bit south of there. This is still where it's that concrete ramp. But it was interesting to actually go into these bridge towers and see how these things are manned, operated, and how they go up and down during the lifts, and the many changes that, have happened over the last 20 or 30 years with how often these things are lifted and looked at.
And is there someone that is in there? You said manned or womaned. Is there anyone that stays in those little towers on either side of the bridge?
No. So I have a few folks that I know. Well, my good friend Melissa over at the JAM, she knows a lot of bridge operators. And we talked to CDOT about this, too, that the bridges that we have downtown, so we've got 37, this number kind of fluctuates. We have more than 37 movable bridges, but many of them don't move as much anymore, if at all. And they just redid the bridge over Chicago Avenue, so they're reclassifying that. But the most movable bridges anywhere in the world are in Chicago. And up until the 70s and the 80s, there was someone in each of those towers 24/7. And up until 1995, the federal government and the Coast Guard mandated that they had a regulation that in case of an emergency or something had to move quickly, the city must have provided that 32 of the 37 bridges be able to be moved within 30 minutes. So essentially, they had a staff round the clock ready to move those things at a moment's notice. And starting in 1995, they changed all the regulations. It was just a lot of manpower or woman power needed to staff all those all the time. And now, for the most part, all the bridge operators, who, by the way, work for CDOT, Chicago Department of Transportation, controls the bridges. Most of the bridge operators work in the canals, and they work where all the shipments come in from Canada, or they come to the St. Lawrence River, then into Lake Michigan. They drop off the salt on the southeast side of Chicago or northwest Michigan. That's where all the bridge operators are stationed for the 24/7. They only come up and go in those towers on the planned bridge runs when they lift them up for the sailboats, which are scheduled, you know, on the Wednesdays and the Saturdays in the spring and fall. So most of the time when you're walking by those bridges, unless it's during the bridge lifts, there's not someone in there.
What about the inspections, John? Do we know how often the rounds are that they inspect each of these bridges? Is it daily, weekly, monthly, yearly?
What I know is that the last records we have of an inspection of this area, of this particular bridge, was back in 2017. But I don't know specifically if they're looking, you know, more intensely, or, you know, you guys are mentioning the potholes and the freezes and the thaws back and forth, whether they're digging in and looking at them more often. They say that CDOT was the one to discover this. I don't know if it was on this routine inspection or, you know, someone drove over it and said, hey, we better call someone about this or what happened. But, you know, it's, when you kind of like zoom out here and we talk about infrastructure in the city and in Chicago, there's a lot of deficient bridges, self-admitted deficient bridges. In fact, federal records show that of the 1,700, so we're talking all the bridges, not only the ones over the river, of all the bridges in the county, 1,200 of inspections came back with worse records than the one on Lakeshore Drive. So 1,200 out of the 1,700 were labeled worse than the one that broke down sometime yesterday morning.
That's not that encouraging, John. I'll be honest with you.
No. It doesn't feel that good. No.
Well, I mean, I guess you think the worst, like that bridge could have collapsed, but chances are it probably wouldn't have from that. They did close, northbound Lakeshore Drive is still closed, but as Bill mentioned earlier, there's still cars going on lower Wacker / Lakeshore Drive. I would think that should be closed too.
Well, I don't know. Obviously, I'm not a bridge engineer, but my friend at the JAM also knows a bridge engineer, and they're working on it. I imagine that they've, you know, at this point, now that the alarm has been sounded quite loudly here, that they're going to make sure that that it is safe, because I was on with Andrea last night, and I drove in, and I thought the same thing. I was expecting to be rerouted southbound at some point. I couldn't believe I was able to cross the bridge and get all the way to Wacker, and then do it again. So it makes you think twice. And you guys, I think one of your callers referenced it too last hour. The Minneapolis collapse, of course, on 35W, just horrifying. We can all joke about it now because, of course, and really, I was looking at talking to some experts who say, we really lucked out in a way that this was what happened, that something like this happened before you see a large structural failure or a collapse of this thing.
And John, I mentioned earlier, especially in the case of the Minnesota Bridge collapse 5 years ago, everybody gets really upset about it for a week or two, and then it just kind of floats away. Is that going to happen here in Chicago? I know they're fixing the situation here, but are they really going to inspect the other bridges more closely to make sure that we don't have a disaster on our hands?
Well, we have such a short attention span for news these days, it seems like, because it all comes so quickly. And I hope not. I mean, I think infrastructure is probably the least political thing we could talk about.
Sure.
It's like the one thing that I feel like, whether you're on the left, you're on the right, everyone knows it, everyone admits it, it's just not sexy. It's really hard to run on platforms of infrastructure change. I think it's something we all know, but it's something that, with the logjam of everything that else that happens politically, whether we're talking in the federal level, the state level, local level, it all kind of gets gummed up. I mean, they were talking about the deficiency with bridges and how much it would cost to kind of redo and reinspect and re-get up to code on some of these bridges. And the city's yearly budget shows, the most recent records that we have looked at, was that, you're talking, you need $7 billion. The city admits that it wants $7 billion to fix these bridges and only dedicated about $2 billion to the cause.
Wow.
Due to budget constraints. So we're clearly falling short locally. I know we're falling short at the state and federal level. And at some point, we're just, as taxpayers, going to have to pony up a lot of this. I mean, that's ultimately where it's going to have to come from, is from our own pockets.
The other thing to consider, and this is unpleasant, but the inconvenience of it. I know safety comes before inconvenience, but think about it. If major bridges along a thoroughfare like Lakeshore Drive are closed down, that messes with traffic for weeks or months or years.
Yeah, you're not even talking about just people driving over the bridges, but I know I have some friends that live in the the west side of Chicago. When that Chicago bridge was closed, and it's been closed for the past couple of months, I think it's opening up again this week or early next week, the Chicago bridge over the north branch of the river. I mean, you're talking about commute times doubling. There's just not many ways over the river. We've
right.
got a lot of bridges, but I can list, Chicago Division North as you're going north, and then you're going south, you got, 22nd and 31st? I mean, you don't have that many options to
right.
get over the river. So certainly these bridges over the river are a major issue, and it's not like there's a lot of room at the Gene Bird Interchange to fit more traffic through there. So, we're in a tight situation. It's just a matter of, I think that, you mentioned, are we going to move on from this sort of thing too quickly? It's a matter of, if this bothers you, these are the issues, these local bridge, these local roadway transportation, not sexy issues, that people have got to be just as vocal about the other ones if they are going to expect any change.
Right, right.
Be careful out there, everybody.
Yep.
John, thank
you
for checking in.
John, we appreciate it. John Hanson.
Yeah, good bridge talk. See you next
host
week for
of
bridge
the
talk.
Jam. His new book, The Bridges of Cook County, available wherever books are sold. Thank you, John.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Take care.
You too. I shouldn't even be laughing at all. It's just kind of scary.
It is scary, and I know I said this morning, but think about what might have been. If nobody had noticed mm-hmm. this thing, it would have been a disaster. So we're very, very fortunate. We dodged a bullet. Huge bullet. All right, we'll take a break, and then there's more discussion. If you'd like to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. Call us or text us there. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. I want to invite everybody to join us on the stream. It's Wendy's special birthday party show on the stream.
God, I hope not.
All your favorite stars will be here.
Really? Who? Name one.
Oprah.
I have wanted to talk to Oprah on the radio.
Not Oprah Winfrey, Oprah Krakowski. She's the only person who would answer my call. God. So she'll be on. I know you've always wanted to talk to Oprah, and you never have.
Well, now
someday,
I'm finished.
Don't say you're
now
fit.
I want to talk to Kelly Clarkson. I wanted Oprah to be my best friend, but mm-hmm. now it's Kelly Clarkson. And she's got a show
I
she's
think
starting
that's
up.
Much more realistic that you guys are best friends. Yep.
Well, speaking of best friends, how's your best friend?
Grant Mulvey?
Yes.
Chicago Blackhawk great Grant Mulvey's doing fine.
When's the last time you talked to him?
Monday.
You're a liar.
Yesterday. Yeah, we went sledding.
I'm glad you even amuse yourself.
He surprised me with a sled. This
we should check in
sled.
With him.
He's doing great.
Just to say hello, because the Blackhawks have really turned it around.
Oh, my gosh. They're so exciting. Seven straight, Wendy. And today they play the Boston Bruins later tonight for number 8.
Whenever you say that, I think of Breezley and Sneasley.
Breezley Bruin.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wonder if there's ever been a team in the NHL. Oh, I wonder. I don't even know who to ask this of. The Blackhawks had a string earlier this season where they lost a bunch in a row. I can't remember how many, 12? Was it 12 in a row?
It was a lot.
I wonder if a team has ever lost and won 10 in a row in the same season. Because you'd have to have a really up-and-down year to do that, and the Blackhawks have had a really up-and-down year.
I bet Dave Ennett would know the answer to that.
I'll ask Dave Ennett.
I don't know if he's
maybe
still
he
here.
Would. He might be. Yeah, he's probably gone for the day.
And I'm seeing something. Toys R Us is planning a 2019 comeback. You saw this?
It was talked about, but now
it looks like it's for sure happening.
They're looking into it. They're considering their options. I hope that happens.
Several former Toys R Us executives have started True Kids brand and have plans to revive Toys R Us, Babies R Us, and Jeffrey the Giraffe.
Here's what they've done. They've put little Toys R Us stores in other stores. They did this for Christmas.
Kiosks?
I don't know if it qualifies as a kiosk. It's a pop-up store, though. And Toys R Us, actually, when they were running full force, they would do this with, like, F.A.O. Schwartz. There'd be, within Toys R Us, there'd be an aisle that was the F.A.O. Schwartz aisle. So Toys R Us experimented with that a little bit at Christmas time, and I think it went well. So now they're looking to branch out a little bit. I hope it happens.
This is a mean question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Have they been missed? Because Target has picked up the slack and Amazon and other things.
Here's where they've been missed the most. By me, number one, and then other toy companies have had to make a lot of cutbacks because sales are down because they were the number one toy retailer. And they're not there. So, yeah, Target picked up some slack. Walmart picked up some slack. Barnes & Noble. But it's not Toys R Us.
Yeah.
So a lot of the major toy companies had to let a lot of people go last year.
We're going to have to let you go, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
What's Jeffrey been up to?
I don't know exactly. I'm not sure.
I'm worried about him.
I'm not sure.
All right. Well, coming up, the stories that matter with Dave Schwann from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's right here, 720 WGN.